So it was one of those things that it just happened. And as a young teacher, I was wanting to fit in with the band directors and let them know I was a team player and do whatever I wanted to do. So that's a story I don't really tell very often, to be honest with you, but it did happen. Yeah, I took a round from the 12 gauge pretty close to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Stage, the official performing arts podcast of the NFHS. I'm your host, Ken Burke, and today our guest is Mike Plunkett, former assistant director with Oklahoma Secondary School Activities Association. Mike is recently retired, but he has had a great impact on the world of performing arts for decades, serving on NFHS music committees and boards and so much more. But I know we'll talk about that in a little bit here. But Mike, I really do appreciate you coming on today. How are you and how's retirement treating you?
I am doing great. Thank you, Ken. It's an honor to be part of the stage again. And still trying to get you this retirement thing. You know, 2 years I've been doing, getting kids ready in August or getting all the music stuff ready in Oklahoma. It seems weird not to be running around doing frantic things at this time of the year. But I'm doing great. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm sure there's a bit of a learning curve here, as I'm sure you're getting acclimated to being retired. But yeah, I'm excited today. From what I hear, you were somewhat of a legend in the performing arts world, so having you on is really an honor. But now I really just want to start the conversation with our million-dollar question that we ask everybody. As a child, what did you want to be when you grew up, and how did you get to where you are now?
Man, that's a great question, and I'm going to answer this to the best of my knowledge, but to be real honest with you, and just stop me anytime I'm getting long-winded. I don't have a lot of memories of growing up, to be honest with you. My father was in the military. We moved a lot. I went to about 12 different schools before I got to high school. So in honesty, I don't really recall ever dreaming of being a fireman or a policeman or anything like that. I don't have a lot of memories besides about grade 7 on. I can remember some things. So I did never dream of being, a fighter pilot or whatever. I was just kind of a student that moved around a lot with my dad and my family. And my first recollection of really wanting to know what I wanted to do with the rest of my life was probably grade 6 or 7 or something like that. And I had an interest in music, and I also had an interest in automotive, building motors and that kind of stuff. So I guess I'd have to answer your saying probably – music was kind of in my life for as far back as I can remember. So I guess grade 7, I kind of had an interest in music, grade 6 or 7.
Yeah. So kind of piggybacking off that question, I like to ask every person this too. What was your favorite activity in high school, and how formative was that for you now? Was that music? Was that theater? Was that band? What was that?
That's a great question. I was actually, if I can double back on what I was telling you earlier, I went to 3 different junior highs. First one was in Alaska, second one was in Arizona, and then my father retired and came to Oklahoma. And I had really good music teachers my 7th and 8th grade year in both those locations. Came to Oklahoma, did not have as great an experience with the teacher that I pulled, but it's okay. I mean, being the new kid, you move in and everybody knows everybody and you don't know anybody, and it's just, it's a little tougher. But I kind of made the decision in grade 9. I really was participating in vocal music. I was doing some stuff in band, but I was primarily a vocal music student. Didn't have a great experience. Tried out for an honor group for the 10th grade high school, did not make it. And I, like a lot of students, said, I'm done. I'm quitting. I'm going to go build motors. I'm going to go to Votech. And strangely enough, I was pretty much dropped out of music. And thanks to 2 young ladies that were in the 9th grade groups with me, they came to me and said, why are you dropping out? And they said, you really ought to give this high school teacher a shot. He's a great teacher. We're having a lot of fun. You ought to give it a shot. So on a whim, I decided, well, maybe like most 9th grade kids, 9th grade boys, when 2 9th grade girls ask you to do something, you kind of consider that, And the fact they were kind of cute didn't hurt. But anyway, I got back in and I said, I'm going to give this music thing a try. I'll give this high school guy a try, even though I didn't make the honor group and you didn't select me. I'll get in some of the other groups. And it was a very important decision. Ken, I've always said that we should have a light bulb that goes off, you know, in the room when you wake up some morning and say, hey, you're going to make a big decision today that affects your life. But unfortunately, we don't get that light bulb. And I made a decision that day to get back into music, and that changed my life, to be quite honest with you. That decision to go down to the counselor's office and say, hey, I want to change my schedule, I want to get back into music, changed my whole trajectory of my life. And so I got back into music. And to answer your question, music classes were my favorite classes in high school. I can't tell you one kid that I sat with in history class. I know I took history. I can barely remember my English teacher's name, but I know I had a couple of those. But I can remember every kid that I sat next to in my music class. It was very exciting for me to be part of something that was bigger than just me, to be part of a team, to be part of a group, to have a common goal, to work for goal in music and try to achieve that. So it's a very easy answer. For me, my favorite class was music. And I was primarily, like I said, a vocal music student, although I did some instrumental stuff and was in some band stuff. I really enjoyed the vocal music aspect of it. And I met a great teacher by the name of Ron Staton. And Ron Staton, who is still a very good dear friend of mine, changed my life by making me realize the love I had for music, and actually decided to make it my major and go on to become a teacher. So anyway, that's a long answer to a very short question. I apologize, but that's kind of how it all happened for me.
No, yeah, I love that. That's great. And it's so amazing how one simple decision can affect the rest of your life, like you were saying. You just said you were a teacher, and I heard you were a teacher for 20 plus years. Did that decision affect you wanting to be a teacher and then later into a state admin role?
Teaching part, absolutely. You're kind of chosen to be a teacher, or maybe it picks you sometimes. I was very lucky in the fact that relatively early in my life, I decided about my junior year that I wanted to try this music major thing. And I was able to teach at the same high school for 21 years. I was very lucky. I had a great bunch of kids, good administration, and an acceptable program. And it's fun to build a program. It's more fun to try to maintain a program. I was lucky in the fact that I kind of knew what I wanted to do. And yes, my decisions to be in music in high school very much affected my decision to become a teacher. It kind of picked me. I don't think I was really any good at anything else. I don't know what else I could have done, to be honest with you.
Was there a favorite part of teaching for you? And this question's kind of a two-parter. Was there a favorite part of teaching, and what advice would you give to teachers now just starting out or new to the music education career?
Well, my favorite part, there's too many to name. I love being around the kids. You know, the kids make you young, they keep you going. There's nothing funnier than a bunch of high school kids. I'm telling you, it'll make you just laugh. Some of the funniest and craziest things I've ever heard in my life were said by my high school students. And to this day, it's still some of the funniest stuff. I taught in a way that probably would get you fired nowadays, I imagine. I had a lot of fun with the kids, and we'd shoot back and forth and have a good time. But I think with all the new rules, maybe I'd probably be fired, to be honest with you. But but we had a good time, and that was my favorite part, just being around the kids. I mean, there's so many things, you know, that there's too many to mention. But one of the things I would tell new teachers is it's okay not to know everything. One of the biggest issues I saw were teachers coming out of college thinking they knew it all. They were afraid to ask for help, or chose not to ask for help. That's not the way it was with me. I asked everybody everything to try to learn from them. I made it very clear I didn't know much. And when I heard a group and I wanted to know how you got your kids to sound that way, I'd go take a day and sit in your rehearsal. And I'd find you at the music convention and say, hey, can you tell me how you get your kids to sound like that? And tell me what literature I should be doing. And I asked for help everywhere. People who've been teaching for 15, 20, 30 years, you can learn a lot from them. You know, even the bad teachers, you can learn a lot from, but the good ones you can really learn from as well. So I would say to them, don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a big sense of humility in that too, and lowering yourself enough to, you know, go ask questions, be somebody that wants to learn, a lifelong learner, like, you know, what you're supposed to be as a human. But this next question, I'm interested to see what your answer is going to be. Is there a specific, any specific story or events that defined your experience as a musician or a music educator? Because I've heard some wild stories from James Weaver. I also heard of a story, I mean, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, of you getting shot in the chest when you were in band. What was that? How did that happen?
Okay. You've been talking to James Weaver, I can tell. It's a story I don't really talk about very much, but I'll be glad to do it with you. Okay. And this came up because of our band's safety course that Dr. Weaver asked me to be part of. And they actually all came to Oklahoma City. So I showed them the x-rays, which I should have never done. But anyway, here's the story. In 1980, I was a brand new teacher. This was in 1980, fresh out of college. I'm young and kind of stupid. And our band director at the time said, we're going to do a halftime show at homecoming that includes the junior high and high school band students combined. And you have to put yourself back in 1980, which I know you're too young to know. But there was a show on TV called Dallas. And everybody was talking about this episode of Who Shot J.R.? J.R. Ewing, the oil baron, was shot. And anyway, they decided they were going to do a Who Shot J.R. halftime show. And sure enough, they asked me to be J.R. And I told them, well, guys, I got to be honest with you. I'm a little leery about this whole thing. Tell me what it is. Well, we're going to play the theme from Dallas. You're going to be on the far 50-yard line. You're going to come down the 50-yard line, have girls on each arm, be smoking a cigar, a big cowboy hat on. And then we're going to tell everybody, we're going to show you who shot JR if you come to the halftime show. And the junior high band director, a buddy of mine, said, I'll get a double barrel shotgun. We'll load it with blanks and we'll shoot. Da-da-da-da-da. And I agreed to do it. So all week long, we practiced out there on the field. And the day of the show, we decided to have a run through. And we were going to use the real gun and the real blanks and all that stuff. Unbeknownst to me, my buddy at the junior high who supplied the shotgun tried to purchase some 12 gauge blanks, and apparently there weren't any. So he had a police officer, he tells me, unload some 12 gauge shotguns with the pellets, take it out to make it a blank, and they put chalk and glitter in it. And we actually tested this. So we took the shotgun, we hung up butcher paper, we figured out, hey, if you get all the BBs out, you can put chalk, you can put glitter in the stuff, and it looks cool under the lights. So that was the plan. So the day of the morning show, we got 100 kids out there on the field, and there was two shots from the shotgun. The first one was a shot that I told my friend, the only way I'm going to do this is if I am the person responsible for filling the shotgun shells myself. And if you've ever opened up a shotgun shell, there's a wax pad in there. And you have to pick out all the BBs from the wax pad or else you don't get all the BBs out of there. So unbeknownst to me, we did one run through. We used two of my shells that worked great. On the second run through, my buddy put in one of my shells and one shell that he had a police officer, who was one of his band parents, do for him. I didn't know that. And apparently one of two things happened. Either it was a live round or it was a round that they didn't get all the BBs out of, one of the two. So if you can imagine a high school and junior high band on the field playing the theme from Dallas, and out comes JR, which is me, and the first shot is supposed to knock me down, and the second guy is supposed to be, as I was running away, he was supposed to shoot me in the back. I was a little too close. Long story short, I fake the first one. I fall down, turn around the second shot, and he fires, and it knocks me to the ground, basically. Well, we'd been practicing this all day. The kids thought, oh, well, it's just acting, and I got hit. There was 21 pellets that hit me, and there's a bunch of them that hit the ground around me.
Gosh!
So it was fairly traumatic. And this is the brand new teacher who's been teaching now for about a month at the school, and all the kids see me laying there, and there's blood coming through my three or four shirts that I had worn for extra padding so I could take the fall. So yeah, I got hit with a 12 gauge from about 15 yards away, and thank God nobody was hurt. Seriously, from the kids. I was very concerned about that. They brought me in the emergency room. Turned out I was, you know, I didn't, I was lucky. I had, like I said, I had 21 pellets. Some of them went in and out, in the back of the arm, out the front.
Oh my gosh.
They were through. Some of them are still with me to this very day. So it's one of those things that it just happened. And as a young teacher, I was wanting to fit in with the band directors and let them know I was a team player and do whatever I wanted to do. So that's a story I don't really tell very often, to be honest with you, but it did happen. I took a round from the 12 gauge pretty close.
It's
the way things are, unfortunately.
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, not to segue like harshly or anything, but if you haven't taken the band safety course and you're listening to this, go take it right now. Because that is crazy, Mike. Holy cow. I can't even imagine.
Well, it was a different time. Yeah. And the thing to remember back here now is it was a much different time in teaching. We actually had cleared the use of that 12 gauge with the principals, and they allowed us to do it.
Wow. Right. Yeah. I assume that's not going to happen in today's schools. But you talked about it a little bit. You've helped create with the NFHS many of its landmark music courses like band safety. What drove you to help create these resources? Was it because you got shot in the chest, or was it you wanted to, and what were the benefits that you think you've given to the community through them?
Well, I'll be honest with you. Dr. James Weaver called and said, "Would you be part of this?" And you know, when Dr. James Weaver called, you do it. He's an amazing force, and you know, we kid around about James all the time, and he's a great guy. And we all kind of started as music administrators, and I was in Oklahoma, he was up north, and we got to know each other a little bit that way. But we very quickly determined that to do this job by yourself is very, very, very difficult. It's great to ask for help. So we got to know each other through doing that. So when James took over and came up with this idea of putting some new video classes online and redoing some of the old ones, I loved working with him and the other people on the committee. When you get a chance to work with Mon Tyfel and Alan Greiner and all these people that are outstanding. So, and it's a lot of work. And I'm telling you, a lot of work on some of those. And we've adopted the band safety here in Oklahoma. If you have anything to do with marching band, you are required to watch that. And I know a lot of kids have too. So hopefully there's some good information in there to keep kids safe. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've gone through all of them, and all of them are just so, there's so many great lessons in those courses. And if you haven't taken them and you're listening, please go take them. It will teach you so much that you won't even know, that you don't even know that you don't know. But with your background in music, how did you adapt and excel in speech and debate and theater at the OSSAA? How did you even get in that role?
Well, that's interesting because I don't know if I ever really excelled at it. You'd have to ask my speech and debate teachers in the state. But when you take the job in Oklahoma as the music supervisor, it comes with being speech, debate, and drama. So it's a one position job that is all fine arts. So you're correct. I knew absolutely nothing about speech, debate, drama. I'd never participated in high school. In music, I had done that kind of stuff. But I really, besides being part of doing musicals at my own high school, I really had never done a lot of stuff. I'd been in a few plays myself. I'd been in some musicals. I've done things like that. But I didn't have a clue what debate was about. So I had to learn. So in Oklahoma, we have about 100,000 students who participate in the athletics. And that's if you count a kid twice. So if a kid plays baseball and football, you count him twice. So we have about 100,000 of those students in Oklahoma. In the fine arts, there are about 100,000 students as well. So when you think about the position at the OSSAA, I was in charge of 100,000 students, and there were 6 or 7 other staff members to do the other 100,000. So I used to always give them a hard time that I was carrying a lot heavier load than they were, which is not necessarily true, but you know, you say that to your colleagues. But the truth of the matter is there's 100,000 of them. Now, those 100,000 kids, I'd say probably 80% of them are music. You know, when I'm talking band, orchestra, choir, marching band, jazz band, all that stuff. About 80% of the job is music, and about 20% is speech, debate, and drama, in Oklahoma at least. Now, in a perfect world, they would have another staff member that does nothing but speech, debate, and drama. But in Oklahoma, the way it's set up, is we are it's a two person, you know, it's a two pronged fork here. So I had to learn, and boy, I'll tell you what, If you don't know anything about drama and speech and debate, you learn quickly because drama people are very dramatic, and speech and debate people, debate people love to argue. If you haven't learned that, they love to argue. That's what they do for a living.
Yeah.
So I learned very quickly, how to try to talk to those people. I think the moral of the story is this, and keep it down because I wouldn't want my music people to hear me say this, but they're really a lot like us. Speech and debate and drama people aren't that much different than music people. They're doing the same thing. They're saving kids' lives. They're changing kids' lives, except they're doing it on the stage. So it's hard for music people to understand that. What we're all doing is being part of a bigger team. We're being part of a group, or we're trying to work for a common cause. And my brother was a head football coach. So we used to talk all the time about the similarities between music and athletics. They're very, very similar. It's a different world, and those people are very dedicated. They're very passionate, and they are very, very vocal when you screw up. And boy, I screwed up a few times, learning my job, and they will let you know that you screwed up, and you say, yep. It's great to be part of the National Federation family because it allows you as an administrator to make those phone calls to other people. And, why reinvent the wheel? They've already been there, and they can help you.
Yeah, I love what you said. I mean, I think I say it all the time, no matter if you're in music, no matter if you're in theater, drama, athletics, the students care about something and they want to be involved in a bigger purpose than themselves. And having those activities available is crucial for saving kids' lives. Like you said, like it can be a sense of community that they don't have outside of that. So it's really important for a lot of high school students. But Mike, as we start to wrap up our conversation today, I really do thank you for coming on. I know a lot of people look up to you in the performing arts world, so it was an honor talking with you. Any last thoughts before we close down today?
Teachers are changing kids' lives, saving kids' lives. They're changing the trajectory of people's lives. And I'm a perfect example because of a teacher reaching out to me and helping me. I have gone a totally different direction in my life. And I think that happens every day. So thank you for supporting the performing arts, and it's an honor to get to talk with you, and hopefully this has been semi-entertaining, and I had a good time talking with you. I do want to say before I close out, every time I get an email from you, when you get old, your eyes are bad, so I look down, and I think I've gotten an email filmmaker, and every time I get an email from you, I got, oh my God, Ken Burns wants to get a documentary, then I realize it's you, so anyway.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm really sorry. But Mike, thank you again for coming on. For all the listeners out there, like always, please remember to like, subscribe, and share this podcast. No matter if you share it with a teacher, administrator, students, it will go a long way for us. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope to see you next time on the stage.